Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Hey, good morning, my friends. Glad you could join us this morning. Is everyone excited to be here this morning? Well, I am not Stephanie Chesucky, and I'm not Joel Leach. But that doesn't mean we're not going to have a good time this morning. I have learned over the years, one of the great advantages of becoming an old fart is I've learned to be flexible, to roll with the punches, and to go. Joe will be with us, and I think you're going to really like the story. Joe and the Road Crew, they're the fellas who did our theme song, and the Road Crew 66 got some great music out there. A little something come up with the family, so Joe will have to reschedule for the 30th. So we're going to do something a little different here. One of my favorite periods in history, if I was to be pinned down, is exciting. The time we live in is very exciting, but the 1885 to 1930, possibly 1940 period, intrigues me immensely. It was such a dramatic transitional period in the world, but from American societal transition was just astounding in these years. And somehow, a lot of these stories got overlooked. You know, in the teens, the 20s, the 30s, we were obsessed with recording the stories of pioneers like, you know, Jim Bridger and Wyatt Earp and things of this nature. But for some reason, the stories of the people who lived from 1885 to 1930 didn't get talked about very much. As an example, how many people know about Mary Anderson? Mary Anderson patented the first manual windshield wiper. And in 1917, Charlotte Bridgewood manufactured the first automatic windshield wiper and started a small company. How about Marie Luring? She became history by becoming the first female truck designer in 1920s. She was a member of the Society of Automotive Engineers. She designed Mack trucks and contributed to the designs of the now legendary Mack Jr. pickup trucks. Florence Lawrence, we'll talk about a bit more about her in a minute. Helen Dryden, Audrey Moore Hodges. Anybody familiar with these? They worked with Raymond Lowy to design Studebakers. Helen Rother Athencott was a designer at Nash. Betty Thatcher designed the 1941 Hudson instrument panel. In 1943, Harley Earl at General Motors hired Amy Stanley Light, Mary Ellen, Sue Vanderbilt, Ruth Glennie, Marjorie Ford, Sandra Lonier, Jeanette Linder, Gerard Cavanaugh, Peggy Sauer, Dagmar Arnold, and some other gals. They became known as the Damsels of Design. A lot of our cars that were so revolutionary in the post-war era, the dashboards and the intricate design work on the interiors, attributed to these gals. I mentioned Florence Lawrence. This is a pretty astounding lady that slipped through the cracks of history. She made her motion picture debut in 1906, and she was one of the first superstars of the cinema, if you will. But she was an avid automobilist. And she learned to make most of her own repairs. She became quite renowned as a mechanic. She was obsessed with speed. She purchased ever more powerful vehicles. In 1912, she acquired a Lozier Knickerbocker Berlin for $6,500. This is one of the most powerful production cars of the time. And she tweaked it. She made adjustments to make it even more powerful and faster. She's also a passionate inventor. In 1914, she devised a mechanism that served as a signaling arm to notify trailing drivers of a pending turn, the simple push of a button that raised and lowered a flag on the rear bumper. She also created a brake warning system. By pressing the brake pedal, a small sign would light up at the back of the car saying, "Stop." In 1916, she was credited with creating the first electric windshield wiper. Pretty amazing stuff. Now, as you might have guessed by now, there is a theme to this morning's program. Not only are we talking about overlooked people, we're talking about the fairer sex, if you will. I know that's not politically correct, but women. Short version, long story. Some years ago, Dennis Kassaber, being an old desert rat like I am, I'm really know the love the Mojave Desert and the desert country. And Dennis Kassaber was an incredible fella and very smart, very intelligent. He's responsible for 66 Buffs. He's the fella who brought the Goff Schoolhouse back from extinction and created just an astounding museum complex, literally in the middle of nowhere in this forgotten little town of Goffs, California. But he chronicled a lot of Mojave Desert history over the years. And the Mojave Road, he put that back in the spotlight. This was a Native American trade route that was developed as a primary desert crossing in the 1850s and 1860s, and remained in pretty important until the advent of the railroad in the 1880s. Well, Mr. Kassaber had I was talking to him about some desert history, and he asked me if I was familiar with Susie Keefe Smith or Lula Mae Graves. The name sounded vaguely familiar, but I had no, no idea on who these people were, aside from the fact that they were photographers. Specifically, Susie Smith was quite the photographer. She, she created postcards like Mr. Frasher. Frasher postcards are, they're just highly prized. Susie Smith's were a little bit different. Well, let me get into this a little bit. Let's take this back, and then I'll get you into why these two women are important, and I have a book to recommend for you. And then we'll answer your questions. You can either call in, type them in, we'll answer them. Little's known about William David Bradshaw. Now, a fellow named Horace Bell spent some time with Bradshaw in the gold camps of California. In his journal, he called him a most polished gentleman and a natural lunatic. He may have been a bit of both. And even though the historic record is thin, there's no doubt that Bradshaw was a man that recognized opportunity. And judging by his exploits, he had to be tougher than ironwood bark. Well, this is one of those colorful characters and forgotten chapters in Southwest history. As a fan of Western history, I was vaguely aware of the Bradshaw Trail. But my knowledge of the trail and its namesake was almost comparable to a frog's knowledge of tap dancing. Mr. Kassaber had introduced me to Susie Smith and Lula Graves. But recently, in December, I was at the venerable old Aero bookstore in Burbank, California. I do generally have a book signing there every December, except for the years of the apocalypse. And after the book signing, I always end up perusing the shelves in search of new editions for my library. And it's my Christmas present to myself, so to speak. Well, one of the books I purchased this past year was called Postcards from Mecca, The California Desert Photographs of Susie Keefe Smith and Lula Mae Graves, 1916 to 1936. I highly recommend this little book. It's fascinating. These adventuresome women it's truly mind-boggling. And after Mr. Casimir had introduced me to Smith and Graves, I'd pick up little snippets here and there in conversations, or I'd trip over them in my research, or I'd find a postcard from Susie Keith Smith. Well, their story is a tale of inspiration, of adventure, and of toughness that's very rare today. This book not only was about them, but it was about the Bradshaw Trail and pioneers in the southern Mojave Desert. Now, Susie had been crippled with polio as a child. This didn't hold her back. Her father taught her to maintain and even how to rebuild a Model T Ford. She was a proficient mechanic, even though she wore braces and had very limited use of one leg for the rest of her life. Her father also gave her taught her a proficiency with firearms. Well, as it turned out, both of these skills served her very well. First, when her parents moved to a ranch near Mecca, California, and then when she became postmaster in that remote desert town. Her cousin, Lula Mae Graves, had come out from Chattanooga, had a really, really rough childhood, and she came out to Mecca, and the two became inseparable, and they became obsessed with photography. They become obsessed with the crusty desert rats, the miners, the cowboys, the prospectors, the people who made their living in the deserts. And they did things like chronicle the Bradshaw Trail. They travel it by Model T Ford. The pictures in this book are amazing. They chronicled the fading stage stops and the different fading places in the desert at that time. She and her cousin, they began venturing deep into the desert. They photographed all of these people, and they created an incredible historic record. By the time Smith and Graves began exploring the desert, of course, the Bradshaw Trail was a little more than a historic footnote. It was in use in the 1860s and basically connected the gold camp and gold fields at La Paz on the Arizona side of the Colorado River across the desert with around Riverside, California. The Bradshaw Trail, let's get into that real quick. William Bradshaw, in April of 1846, he had joined the California Bear Flag Rebellion that fought to overthrow Mexican rule and establish an independent California Republic. And by the 1860s, Bradshaw was not only a veteran of the gold rush, he'd been involved with countless other strikes, mining camps, and just adventures. Well, in 1862, as news spread about the discovery of a gold discovery on the Arizona side of the Colorado River by Pauline Weaver, he was a well-known scout and trapper, Bradshaw sensed opportunity, but this time he was going to do something different than chase that opportunity with a pick and shovel. This time he intended to profit from the flood of miners, prospectors, speculators, gamblers, and investors. Weaver's strike was about 250 miles east of Los Angeles. In between was unexplored desert wilderness. The most viable route was an arduous one. People had to travel down the coast of California by ship, up the Gulf of California, and then steamship or long hike along up the Colorado River. The other option was even harder. You would take the Mojave Road, basically from what is now Barstow to the Bullhead City area, and then make your way through the Mojave area of the Mojave Indians down to La Paz. Delmer Ross has another one I want to recommend, Gold Road to La Paz, an interpretive guide to the Bradshaw Trail. He wrote, Bradshaw was befriended by an old Cabazon, chief of the Cahuilla Indians of the Salton Sink. And he was a mail runner from Arizona who happened to be visiting the villages when Bradshaw was there. They provided Bradshaw with a map showing an ancient Indian trade route through the Colorado Desert. which was on maps at that time the northern extension of Mexico's Sonoran Desert. And most importantly, it showed the location of dependable springs and water holes. So with this map and the information in hand, Bradshaw and eight daring men set out to chart the trail from Los Angeles to the Colorado River. Bradshaw knew that if he could cut a trail through the harsh desert and promote it, he would prosper mightily by building a ferry on the river. Well, he mapped the route, he established service stops at key water holes and palm-shaded oases, and he established his ferry on the Colorado River. He gave his brother Isaac the position as manager, and William Waringer as operations head. He went and began promoting the trail in Los Angeles and San Diego. Well, as traffic began flowing along the trail in ever-growing numbers, the ferry, which would carry freight wagons as well as draft animals, literally became a cash cow. To protect his investment, Bradshaw traveled to the newly established capital of Prescott in Arizona and was awarded a 20-year exclusive franchise for his ferry service from the territorial legislature. Well, La Paz boomed, had more than 1,500 people at one time. Some sources say that one year there were 12 saloons built. But like most gold strikes, it was short-lived, and by 1870, most of the mines had played out. They'd gone on, and with the exception of a few prospectors and adventurers, no one used the Bradshaw Trail. It started to fade into obscurity. Susie Keefe Smith and Lula Mae Graves, they put the spotlight on it. Incredible, epic adventures across an absolute desert wasteland. These two adventuresome young women. They traveled the road, they documented it, they photographed it, and just amazing. Let me give you a little bit here, and it's a really interesting story in multiple ways. A kind of a sad story. Susie Smith had a very poor life after she left the desert. Lived in a lot of poverty. Very, very poor and abusive marriage. But she went on and she befriended a lot of immigrants, started a lot of missionary work, providing food, clothing, shelter to orphanages, things of that nature. Lula Mae Graves went on to quite an adventuresome life from there. She married, moved to Hawaii, and took pictures in Pearl Harbor just days before the Japanese attack. This book, I just can't say enough. It's small. Probably a third of the book is dedicated just to their photographs. But the book is, again, Postcards from Mecca, the California Desert, Photographs of Susie Keefe Smith and Lula Mae Graves. It says here in the opening of the book that Susie Keefe Smith was born on a ranch near present-day Los Angeles in 1900. And she had kind of a contentious relationship with her mother. She used to say that she hated captivity, thought school was captivity. She prayed that God would make something happen so she wouldn't have to go to school. 2 weeks later, she had polio, and she was unable to attend school for a year. And then was in a wheelchair. They didn't think she would ever walk again. And like I say, she suffered with permanent weakness in a leg, needed braces. She was deaf in one ear. And she had impaired balance issues for the rest of her life. But she still became the postmistress out in remote Mecca, California. She became proficient with horses, worked on automobiles. I look at these pictures of where they take this Model T Ford in the desert. I got to tell you, folks, I would have to do some serious, serious drinking to take my Jeep into some of the places that they were taking that damned old Ford. Quite a story. The overlooked people, the stories of those people, the innovation, the inspiration, 1885 to 1930, it's fascinating that we haven't really paid more attention to those stories. to stories like that of Susie Keith Smith and Lula Mae Graves, and the women who transformed the auto industry. Interesting stuff, to say the very least. Hey, do you have any questions? Anything I can answer for you? Anything you want to talk about this morning pertaining to adventures in the desert or fascinating people that that seem to have slipped through the cracks of history? One of the things here, these pictures, like say, it's just really amazes me as I look at these photos. This wasn't that long ago. 100 years, in the grand scheme of things, that's not very much. And the changes, you know, that's come to our world since then. One of the things too about this story, Greg, you know, I've got quite a number of those. Ezra Meeker is an incredible character. I talked a lot about Mr. Meeker. Short version, long story. He was born, I believe, 1830. Traveled the Oregon Trail by ox cart with his wife and a newborn son. Became a fortune in growing hops out in Washington, and lost it to hops aphids. Came up with a way to transport freeze-dried foods into the Yukon with his son during the gold rush in the 1890s. Of course, by that time, like say, he's in his 60s now. And then a lot like what you're doing, Greg, and what I'm doing, chronicling Route 66 and these old roads, because we don't want to... We get in a hurry, focused on the future. Sometimes we forget the past. Meeker was concerned we were going to forget about the Oregon Trail. So in 1906, and there again, remember, he was born in 1830. In 1906, he got himself a two-ox team and a wagon, and he set off along the Oregon Trail, a speaking tour, publicity tour, promoting the Oregon Trail. He went all the way to Washington, D.C., met with Teddy Roosevelt. He repeated that trip, I believe, in 1910, met with Congress, managed to finagle. They got authorization to have a commemorative Oregon Trail half dollar minted. But his adventures didn't end there. In 1914, the National, an automobile manufacturing company, provided him with an automobile, and he and another fellow began traveling the country by automobile, promoting the National Old Trails Road history, things of that nature. He was involved with Buffalo Bill Cody, getting the National Old Trails Road together. In 1919, he was working with his son in the Cajon Pass to create the first service station complex, garage complex there, along the National Old Trails Road in the Cajon Pass. Quite a story. This book, going back to this with Susie Keith Smith and Lula Mae Graves, their photography, if you happen to run across any of their postcards, I'd sure like to know about it. I've become very intrigued with these two women. They photographed the desert from 1916 to 1936. Leanne, good morning. Other characters in that period, you know, well, gosh, we only mentioned Buffalo Bill Cody. A lot of people know about him. But, you know, in 1904, he went to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and bought a car from the Michigan Automobile Company, bought himself a Roadster, learned to drive. And he was involved with, he was on the directors for the establishment of the National Old Trails Road. Another colorful character in those years, Effie Hotchkiss. She became a Harley-Davidson mechanic. She was obsessed with speed and motorcycles. And in 1915, her words, not mine, she created a customized sidecar and got a new Harley Davidson. She created a customized sidecar for her, quote, rotund mother. Loaded up some camping gear, some tools, a pistol, a few other things, and they headed for California. Took them a couple months from New York to California, the Panama Pacific Exposition. Became the first women to cross the United States by motorcycle. All grand adventures. I'm glad Leanne's with us this morning. For folks who don't know, Leanne works up at Jackass Junction in Oatman, Arizona, along Route 66. And she's got a new line of natural soaps, but she's been instrumental in working to put together the self-guided walking tour in Oatman. And she also does a little bit of tour work up there. If you get a chance, pop in and see Leanne and learn a bit of the history about Oatman. Speaking of fascinating places and fascinating people. Hey, do we have any other questions? Anybody want to call in, or anybody got some questions they want to ask? Talking about these colorful characters? You bet, Miss Leanne. You betcha. You bet. By the way, Jackass Junction and Fast Fannies and Oatman are now well-stocked with copies of my books that have been defaced with an autograph. We were just up there yesterday and stopped in to see some old friends and make a drive along what I think is one of the most beautiful sections of Route 66. Anyway, again, the name of this book is Postcards from Mecca, California Desert Photographs of Susie Keefe Smith and Lulu Mae Graves. This book has inspired me for getting the Jeep up and, not this summer by any stretch, but this winter, I'm going to head out to a place called Corn Springs in the middle of nowhere. This book has really inspired me. It's part of the Tales of the Mother Road number 31, Mojave Desert Heritage and Cultural Association. Really, really intriguing book. Hey, speaking of books, of course, Leanne has some great books there on Olive Oatman up at the store. But do you have any characters, any books that you would like to recommend while we're here about these kind of people? I know, Greg, you're, deep into books. Maggie May, Leanne, any books that you can recommend that are accurate and authentic stories about these kind of people? I'd sure like to know about that as well. Wow, we burned up a half hour pretty quick now, didn't we? Well, in theory, I think we got everything worked out. Stephanie Stuckey is supposed to join us next week. Let's see how that goes. And then we're going to have Joe Leish of the Road Crew. I think you're going to find his story really interesting. I've been talking to the fine folks over at Earl's Motor Court, a great little time capsule motel along Route 66 in Winslow. They're going to join us as a guest in the next few weeks. And Saturday, I met with some people that have some real vision, and they're bringing it to downtown Kingman. They have bought an old cafe, stone building on Route 66, been closed. The building itself has been closed for 25 plus years. Cafe's been gone for 70 years. They're currently renovating that as a ice cream parlor. Then there's a big vacant spot there on Route 66 in Kingman. They finally got approval. It's been an uphill battle dealing with red tape and things, but they have created, they've got some vintage Airstream trailers that they have renovated. They're going to be moving those in and setting them up as overnight lodging, Airbnb type thing. And then the building next to that used to be the old Denny Moore's Bar. That is going to become a coffee shop. And even better, the ice cream, they found two brothers in Flagstaff that started an ice cream company on Route 66, all natural, old-fashioned ice cream. That's going to be the ice cream they sell in their store. And they found a coffee company along Route 66 that's roasting coffee. And that's what they're going to be offering in their coffee shop. This is exciting stuff. A lot of neat stuff happening out there, my friends. A lot of exciting changes. Some good, some bad, but all exciting. I don't want to tie you up beating my gums too long, but how many people are familiar with Crazy Fred's truck stop out there? Well, Maggie, you know, I have it on the schedule. Just let me know, and we will talk. The folks there at the R.E. Olds Museum, it'd be my pleasure. Telling people where to go, it's kind of what we do. And the walking tour here in Kingman, I hope, will be a template and will be an inspiration for other communities. And we've almost got phase one completely up now. I shouldn't say we, the volunteers at Kingman Main Street. We still haven't got tourism, the city of Kingman's tourism, excited about this yet. But well, we keep, actually, that's kind of a complicated thing. Maconico was a railroad siding just up from Crazy Fred's. There's a railroad spur that cuts across I-40 right there. It's dead end now, and I don't even know why that spur hasn't been used in, God, years. When they put I-40 through, though, they built a underpass there for the highway. But yeah, the Maconico was there. It was basically just a, you know, railroad siding. There was a depot at one time and some buildings. That's all been erased. All the foundations are gone. But it was the connection for the Arizona-Utah Railroad about 1900 that went over to Chloride, Arizona. You can still follow most of that, by the way. That's pretty interesting. Walkabout. Crazy Fred's is just down from that. It's interesting. Crazy Fred's has been there for more than 60 years, and it is a throwback truck stop, the way truck stops used to be, before we got into the big travel centers and travel plazas. Unfortunately, yesterday on my way back from Oatman, I made a pit stop in there. I hadn't been in there in years. You know, that thing is clinging to life. It is, to put it mildly, rougher than a cob. Hey, boy, I don't know what's holding that thing together. Anyway, I digress. Well, my friends, thank you. And if we don't have any more questions, we will button this thing up with a little music from Joe and the boys at Say Hello to You. Leanne, hope you'll consider being a guest this morning. We'll talk about Oatman. Take join me sometime as a guest. Of course, Greg, you've got an open invite. Miss Maggie, maybe we can talk about the Olds Museum sometime. And Keith, hey, why don't you join me some Sunday morning as a guest? Let's talk about all the theater projects that you're involved with. And don't forget, if you find some Susie Keith Smith or Lulu Mae Graves postcards, I'd sure like to know about them. And if you come up with some book recommendations for me, well, send them along too. One more. It's being reprinted. By Motor to the Golden Gate by Emily Post, published originally in 1915. Another tremendous book. It's a time capsule from adventures in that period of time. Well, mi amigos, thank you for joining us. Hope you found this interesting, inspirational, and well, we'll do this again next week. Take care, my friends. Vaya con Dios.